Hi, this is Jason Bortz, talking a little bit about subtext at the behest of my wonderful friend, Babs Batella with the Silver Batella Agency. She shot me an email asking me to say a few words on the subject. And growing up as an actor, and studying, you know, I studied a great deal of my life, and I went from contemporary style to classical, Shakespeare and such and his contemporaries, and learning the difference between, you know, non-subtextual language, which Shakespeare is largely non-subtextual. If anybody's saying, you know, thinking anything underneath the text, they turn and deliver it as an aside to the audience, and then they go back to speaking exactly what they're thinking most of the time. But in contemporary drama, subtext is completely, it's a necessity for dramas and for some comedies. It's not really necessary that much for action films in which people are just punching and shooting and driving. But in dramas, it's absolutely critical, because people go to see dramas not to hear what people are saying, but really to watch what they're doing that may very well be against what they're saying. One of the examples I like to use is, you know, if you watch somebody say, "I love you," and they absolutely mean that they love them, and they have no problem saying, "I love you," and you see the other person say, "Well, I love you too," with no problems, and there's nothing, no problem being solved, absolutely everything is hunky-dory, the scene gets boring pretty quickly. I mean, it's nice and it's sweet and all, but what's really intriguing and captivating are two people who say, "I love you," and one of them, it's very difficult for them to say, "I love you," because they're afraid of being hurt, or they're afraid of being vulnerable, or they're afraid of confessing that love. And maybe the other person, you know, doesn't know if they actually love the other person, you know, doesn't know if they love them. Maybe they have some issues as well. It's much more intriguing and interesting to watch characters that bring baggage or bring motivation underneath the dialogue that they're actually delivering. That's really subtext, the internal monologue. It's the observation of an internal monologue as it conflicts with the spoken words. You can say, "I love you," 1,000 different ways, including ways that actually say, "I hate you," or "I'm jealous of you," or "I want your boat," whatever. It's the internal motivation behind the external show, as it were, to whatever degree the characters exhibit this, you know, the poser or the show person or whatever facade they have up to protect themselves. The underlying dialogue, is really what determines their actions. So as I was taught as an actor growing up, words bend to the intentions of the characters. The words themselves may not be as important as what the dialogue is going on in the character's mind, which presents kind of a quandary as a writer. How do we trust the actor? How do we trust that the director is going to get that subtext that's underneath what's going on? Well, we have 90 to 120 pages, to be very specific. We're painting pictures of characters that have a psychological through line that is consistent. They have an arc to their journey. They have an objective. They have obstacles to that objective, and the way that they deal with those obstacles need to be in line with the character that you create. Therefore, their subtext, everything that's underneath the lines, need to serve that objective. For instance, if Patty wants to fight for, you know, wants to win the love of the person who's married to Jim, who's married to Stacy, but she knows that the relationship is a complete sham, that Jim is married to Stacy out of convenience, or out of duress, and she's fighting to win his love. Now, the overall objective for the film, you know, she's going to fight to win that love throughout the film. That's not going to change unless some drastic measure or some drastic incident completely changes. She finds out that Jim is actually not Jim, that Jim's been dead for 10 years and this is imposter. That's going to change her objective to win his love. But subtext, the internal monologue, is the thing that stays consistent, even if the characters say things that are against that, are seemingly in the absolute different direction. If I say, "I love you, but I actually hate you," I'm serving my internal monologue, my subtext, I'm serving my goal by charming you, or or making you think that I'm on your side in order to get what I want at the end of the show or the end of the scene. So to whatever degree it exists, the psychological barometer, if you will, by which the character measures his given circumstances is subtext. It's underneath what they're actually saying. I'm not going to walk into a room if I'm a spy and say, hey, I'm here for the plans. I'm going to kill you first and then I'll do this. And then, you know, I'm not going to do that unless it's an action film that is absurd, because people don't usually walk into situations like that. I'm going to walk in there and I'm going to have a hidden agenda. It's my subtext. It's what is going on under the surface. I'm going to play at being... I'm going to charm my way into the place. I'm going to ingratiate myself to these people. I'm going to use a lot of very functional action verbs as a writer in my own mind for this character to keep them in line. So if I'm building a character in 90 minutes to 120 minutes, and I need them to have a very sound psychological character arc or a through line that is consistent from scene to scene, that grows from scene to scene as the stakes rise, as the given circumstances change, as rising action occurs, I need to make sure that their responses are consistent in the writing. And I need to trust that my actors and director are intelligent enough. I don't have to spell it out for them. It's, you know, David Mamet was largely popularized by his lack of giving the actors anything but ellipses and hyphens in a lot of the dialogue. So you'd have these characters come into a room and, you know, someone would say, you know, did you do the thing? And the other one would say, the thing. Yeah, the thing. What thing? You know, the thing. Oh, you mean, yes. Nah, I didn't. Why not? Well, I don't know. I can't believe you did that. That's all subtext. You can't possibly play that unless you know what the internal monologue is, what the relationship between these characters are. You need to know how close they are. You need to come up with that as a performer, but as a director, you need to take a look at the dialogue on the page, and it has to be clear as the writer to put it down. Your job as a writer is to make sure that that dialogue, with all those ellipses and hyphens, it actually does flow. It does lead to a conclusion. It does go somewhere, and they're fighting obstacles along the way. For instance, you know, the one guy who didn't do the thing, he's trying to justify the fact that he didn't do it because he ran into some obstacles that prevented him from doing it. And the other guy is like, well, you needed to do that because if you didn't do that, we're screwed. And they're talking about scoping out a bank, or they're talking about closing a deal. You need to know beforehand, okay, what did these guys do prior to this moment and what are they bringing into this scene? And a good example of that, if you watch True Romance, there's a great scene between Christopher Walken and Dennis Hopper, where Christopher Walken is trying to get out of Dennis Hopper where his son is, played by Christian Slater, and they've absconded with something that belongs to Christopher Walken, and Walken is a mob boss. And Christian Slater's father, Dennis Hopper, he's a maintenance guy. You know, he's like a yard worker. And then he's in his trailer on the job site at the train yard, I think it is. And Walken shows up with the heavies. And the whole scene unfolds because Hopper has made a decision. I'm not going to give up any information. I'm not going to compromise my son. That's his objective. I'm going to protect my son. And the obstacle is he knows that Walken will kill him if he does that. So that's a pretty huge obstacle. But the stakes are really, really high. I'm going to protect my son. Walken's stakes are also really high. He needs to get back what belongs to him. I believe it's drugs that were in the trunk. There's a lot of them, and he's a boss of a crime syndicate, and he could be accountable for that. It's a lot of money that's lost, and he's not going to let this kid show him up. So his objective is to find the son and get the drugs back. His is to recover his losses, which is a very important objective for him. And the obstacle to that is he doesn't know where the son is, and he believes this guy knows where the son is. So obviously, you know, pretty clear objectives, pretty clear obstacles, and he will do whatever it takes to get that information out of Dennis Hopper. The whole scene doesn't talk at all about what these objectives are. Christopher Walken never says, you know, I need to get the drugs back because they belong to me. And Dennis Hopper never says, well, I'm not going to tell you because I love my son, I'm going to protect him. Instead, they launch into a diatribe about Christopher Walken's roots. And there's some colorful language, but it's the conversation they have has absolutely nothing to do with what's going on in the scene, what's coming out of their mouths. But Hopper goads Walken into eventually killing him because he knows he's not going to give that information up. It's a brilliant scene to watch as far as subtext goes because, you know, the words, again, they bend to the intentions of the characters. Nothing that they say is important. It's everything underneath it. And that's what subtext is all about. It's creating a dialogue underneath what they're actually speaking that smacks of the actuality, the truth of the scenario, the truth of the scene, and as it plays out in the overall arc of the script, and that it's consistent, that it's psychologically sound, and that it's rooted in the backstory of the characters. We don't want to spell it out for them. We want to the audience to lean forward in their seat and going, oh my gosh, you know, this is so rich. He really, really wants to kiss her and she really, really wants to kiss him, but neither of them are actually going in for the kiss because they're both afraid of, you know, he's afraid that of a relationship and she's afraid that her husband's going to find out and whoa, what are they going to do? And you get sucked into that. It's less about what they say and more about what they don't say, what they're really feeling. Subtext is critical, and it takes a lot of you have to watch a lot of well-directed films. You've got to read people who read a lot of fiction. Read the thoughts of the characters, because that's the one thing we lose as screenwriters. We can't really write all those thoughts out like we can in a novel format. But read those and then condense it. What is the root of this thought process? What is it? What's the root of why they're going after, you know, why is Indiana Jones going after the idol here? You know, what is it? Is it the thrill and the love of the adventure? Is it the thrill of the challenge? Is it because he's fighting for his sense of worth in the grand scheme? Is he doing, you know, is he doing it for affirmation among his peers? Is he doing it to put himself on a pedestal of all the great archaeologists through life? Figure out what it is that these characters are really going after, and then narrow it down. What's the most important thing for them to say? What can they say that reveals a little bit of the obstacle instead of having them just blurt out the obvious? There are a lot of scripts that I read when I'm doing coverage that they're 110 pages long, and you could easily cut half of it out because they just, for lack of the author or the writer trusting the actors to get the point across, they spell it all out. They write it all out. Well, Jim, I came here today because, you know, I just don't think that you validate me as a person, and I really want to show you that I'm actually a pretty good person. Well, Kate, I understand what you're saying to me right now, but, you know, I have things going on in my life too, and I just don't think validation is something that we really need to explore right now. Well, I don't understand what you mean. And it's just all of this weighted down dialogue when you could actually have Kate walk in and say, Jim, can I talk to you? He looks to her, places his wife's picture face down on the desk, and shakes his head slowly. She says, why? That all of that convolution is suddenly wrapped into a moment, an action, and a question. It's something that we bring, you know, instead of the characters making all these statements, have them ask a question, have it linger, have it hang in the air, have it pregnant in the air, have it, you know, and that way the audience can really look from one character to the next, what's going on in his head. And I think that's just, you know, as far as subtext goes, we don't go to movies to watch what people say. That's boring. We want to experience their emotions. We want to get caught up in their secret. We want to explore their opinions. We want to confess something. We don't engage in conversation to speak. We engage in conversation to move, to share, to shock, to woo. We don't go to watch what people say. We watch what they do. And that doing is motivated by subtext. It's what's going on in their mind, what's underneath the lines. That is not, it's the underlying motivation behind what the characters are saying and what the truth is underneath it. what drives them to interact with their characters the way they do. What makes them lie? What makes them tell the truth? Let's get to the root of what they're actually feeling. And that's subtext.